Psalm 33, section 1. There are times in our lives when the Holy Scriptures, especially the book of Psalms, seem to take on a different level of personal meaning. There is no doubt that when the psalmist wrote today's Psalm 33, he had a definite understanding of what it meant to him, what it would mean to the congregation that was about to sing this, what it meant to the culture and the time for which it was written for. We must always be mindful and respectful of that. But along with that original meaning, as important as that meaning is for us to search out and understand, so too these psalms travel through many generations, each generation a culture, times, and events all their own, lending additional meanings. One can only imagine what this psalm meant to, let's say, a young wife in 1780 praying for a young husband's return from the Revolutionary War. Or a family reading it together at a workers' campsite during the Great Depression. Much different times, much different ears and appetites. Same psalm, same original message, different practical applications. I believe that we now live in such a different time. 2020 will be remembered as the year of the novel COVID-19 coronavirus, a world pandemic. At first glance, Psalm 33 appears to be a light and happy psalm, a congregation of saints singing joyfully upon psaltery and harp played skillfully, the Lord looking down from heaven upon the sons of men and their works. A couple months ago, I would have likely seen this psalm in that cheerful context. This morning, though, going through what we are all having to go through, I see it as an inner light at the end of a long tunnel, and how the saint should best respond to the incredible perceived darkness all around us. Thankfully, not too many people in my circles have contracted the virus. Even fewer have tested positive, and most have shown but mild symptoms. Very few of them have died. But this has not been the case for so many others. They have lost dearly. I've come to realize also that this is not just the threat posed by the virus that so affects us. It is the threat of how both society and individuals, and certain individuals certainly, will react. It's the fear and panic and the hoarding and the irrational behavior and the burden on the jobs and economy that takes a much deeper toll. Certainly, we've only begun to see the faint beginnings of this panic. It could get a whole lot worse should this event response linger into the summer. Given this dark climate, given this sudden and out-of-nowhere nature of it, how does evangelists like myself prepare hearts to a light and cheerful examination, a worshipful psalm like this, deserves when most listeners are instead asking themselves, how could God allow for such a monstrous thing? And I can somewhat see their point. I sometimes have to ask myself the same thing. And how do I answer myself that question? Well, I look to the Psalms, such as this one, for some guidance. And when I landed upon this psalm this morning, I asked the same question being asked of me. Do you want to know what it is that I found? Do you dare want to know what it said? Funny, worshiping the Lord seems to come much more easily when everything is going as we believe it should. Even then, though, there's the danger that things will go so well that we tend to forget to worship and we take it all for granted. On the other hand, we find it more difficult to worship God when things go unexpectedly sour, when trade centers topple, stock markets crash, tsunamis flood nuclear reactors. Even then, there is the danger that more The more fanatical in our ranks will push the public even farther away from God by their claims of these things being signs of the end of the world. What is more curious still is how it is each and every time that these occurrences happen, they blindside us. How government and nation and psyche prove to be unprepared. Be it wars or famines or quakes or pandemics, these things all have happened before. They have happened to every single generation. Why is it then that we feel ourselves above this or impervious to it? Or like this time, we have done something different to keep all this from happening. Isn't it rather quite an arrogance we carry, thinking ourselves impervious to it? And then violated even by God when it does happen? That God is to somehow keep our generation from all this when he has not done it for other generations? Is that our expectation? Well then, is it God that is wrong or is it our expectation? Better it would be to expect the unexpected than to blame God when our expectations are violated. Then we can properly ask, why then does God not protect us from these things happening? They're really almost like two separate questions. One being asked from the standpoint of already have been violated and asking why. The other has not been violated yet and is sincerely seeking to understand why this might be. And then once having searched out the divine answer, only then can we properly ask, why should I worship the Lord in the manner Psalm 33 and other Psalms prescribe? I shall not shy away from the question, why, when approached in this proper fashion. Minus our own arrogant and unresponsible expectations, this is a valid question. In this Psalm 33, verse 6, 7, 8, 9, the psalmist writes, "By the word of the Lord were the heavens made, and all the host of them by the breath of his mouth. He gathered the waters of the sea together as a heap. He layeth up the deep in storehouses. Let all the earth fear the Lord. Let all the inhabitants of the world stand in awe of him. For he spake, and it was done. He commanded, and it stood fast." These words give us the idea that the psalmist feels that God is always in command. God created everything. God controls everything. Else, why would he have created it? But then, at the same time, in the same psalm, the psalmist also portrays, verse 16, in 17, "There is no king save by the multitude of a host. A mighty man is not delivered by much strength. An horse is a vain thing for safety, neither shall he deliver by any by his great strength." So if not a king, if a king's not impervious, or a king's not above all this, if even the mighty man is not safe, who then? Who then is safe? My hope is that by the end of this message, each of us will find that place in our hearts to draw from, a praise becoming of the upright, which is the title of this commentary here today. Verse 4 and verse 5 reads, and you can read it here with me. Hopefully you have your Bible open. "For the word of the Lord is right, and his works, all his works, are done in truth. He loveth righteousness and judgment. The earth is full, full of the goodness of the Lord." In the words of that great mid-20th century philosopher, Ricky Ricardo, "Lucy, you got some splainin' to do."